true crime lovers. This is Richa.
And I'm Haley.
Welcome to another episode of Dimes of Crime. What are you drinking today, Haley?
Water.
Yeah, me too. We're both on the same level today. I'm drinking water. I have an early morning work meeting tomorrow. So I can't be like hungover for it. So going with water because it's late here.
Yeah.
It's like 9:30 p.m. So risk the hangover or the headache. Gotta be alert. But yeah, I actually have a crazy story that I forgot to tell you in the last few episodes. Like, there was this one time I went to dinner with my friend who was in town. It was like a great sushi place. It was amazing. So after, and obviously Drew was at home because one of us has to stay back to watch the baby.
Right.
So I just went by myself. And after the dinner, we all like walked back to our car. So I was obviously alone, which honestly happens all the time. I've driven alone by myself before plenty of times to random dinners with friends. And I was walking back to my car. It was towards the end of like this parking lot in the corner. And there was like one silver SUV like parked a space away from me. And I was walking towards my car and this guy sitting in that SUV like looks at me and smiles really big and waves. And I'm like, oh, okay, it's fine. You know, like maybe he's like happy from dinner. It is creepy, but I was like, whatever, I'll wave back. So I waved, I got in my car, I'm plugging in my address into my GPS, you know, putting on my seatbelt, getting ready to start driving. And after everything's plugged in, like I look around to make sure like no one's around me so I can reverse out. And I notice to my left, this guy is looking straight at me and he then takes like a syringe out from his glove box or something. And and then
that Dexter like,
proceeds to put something in the syringe and then puts a ski mask on. Like, no fucking joke. Puts a ski mask
on. This is real life?
This is real life. This
Did
happened
you call
like,
the cops?
2 to 3 weeks ago. Dude, I hightailed it the F out of there. Like, I was already in my car. Everything was locked. I already have a rule where if I get into a parking lot, I, like, the first thing I do after getting in my car is lock all doors. And so I was like, okay, I'm ready, I'm prepped, I'm just gonna reverse and leave out of there and that'll be the end of this. So he followed me out of the parking lot.
Oh my god.
He followed me. He kept following me, and the entire time that he was following me, I could like see him in my rearview mirror and he was waving at me like frantically, like waving. And I was like, what in the F? So I didn't want to drive home because I was like, Leo's there and Drew's there. There's no
you
way
didn't
I want
call
this
the cops?
Creep to. No, I was totally frozen. I was like, cops like at 9:30, 10 at night? Like, are police stations even open that late? Where is the closest police station where I was? Like, I had no idea. And so I literally called my friend who was at dinner with me like just 10 minutes ago. And I was like, I know you live close. I know you have a gated community. Can I just come to you? And she was like, yeah, just come. So I navigated to her place instead. And then I finally lost him once I went into her gated community. Like, I waited with her for like 30 minutes. But he followed me the entire way to my friend's place. It was
frantically waving at you with a ski mask on?
Yeah, the entire time.
Did you see a license plate on him?
No, because like he was in my rear view, right? So his headlights were blinding me. Mm. All I could see was the guy in my rear view, but I couldn't read his license plate. And I was already like trying to hightail it out of there by the time I realized I needed to take this weirdo's license plate down. I was like, I wasn't going to like get out of my car and be like, let me jot down
your license plate number. That is so fucking scary. And I can't believe you forgot to tell me this.
I know. I was thinking about it. I was like, oh my God, I have to tell Haley. We'll talk about it at the podcast. And then it's been so busy. I completely forgot about the story. But I called Drew and Drew was like, come home and I'll take care of it. I was like, there's no way I'm coming home with Leo there. Like, who knows what this crazy person will do.
Yeah. You guys need to get a gun. You don't have to tell me if you have one or not. No, I think you guys need one. That's so scary.
No. I'm not getting a gun with a toddler in the house. I am not against guns. I don't care about people who have guns, but they freak me out. Maybe in the future I will change my mind. But for now, I'm just going to continue to lock my doors and be very aware of my surroundings.
Dude.
Yeah, that was very, very creepy.
I mean, good for you for doing what you did. I mean, I feel like you should have called the cops, but I mean, I wasn't in your situation.
Honestly, I thought about it. I was like, I can.
And I feel like I'd be in the freeze situation too, because like a lot of times I think like when we're in those situations, we don't really know how to handle, like we don't know what's going to happen. Like you don't want to call the cops for no reason. You don't want to call the cops because somebody's being friendly or,
yeah.
You know.
Honestly, I thought about all things. Drew and I were on the phone like as he was following me, and I was like, okay, I can call 911, but I'm not going to stop somewhere for them to come and find me. Like I can't give them an address. I can just give them in the moment where I am. So I could have only given them mm-hmm. a place to meet me once I had gotten somewhere, which the closest place would have been my friends. And then I thought about, okay, I can navigate to a police station, but then what if like it's closed? What if I have to figure out parking and get out of my car and walk somewhere?
Right.
Like, what if he blocks me in somewhere? I weighed out all options,
for sure.
And I was like, no, I think I need to go to somewhere where someone will be waiting for me outside in a gated community, and it needs to not be my house.
That gives me the heebie-jeebies, and I don't like it at all.
I couldn't believe the ski mask. I don't understand it.
And
yeah,
a syringe.
What
the fuck?
I don't understand it at all. Anyways, that makes me so uncomfortable.
That was
my true crime story that happened like 2.5 weeks or something like that ago. It was the most bizarre thing that has happened to me to date by far.
Of course, because you have a true crime podcast.
Exactly. Well, all of the disclaimers still apply. We're going to get into the story really quick. But if you have us not on headphones, put us on headphones and be courteous of everyone else. There might be gory stuff. And this story does have some heartbreaking and gory, not gory, but like just graphic stuff to talk through. So heads up, all of our sources or my sources will be listed in the bio and the description of the episode. So if you're curious, everything can be found there. Are you ready, Hilly? After my very crazy story, are you ready for like a crazier case?
it probably doesn't have as good of a happy ending.
Yeah.
I'm ready as always.
So for today, we're going to down to the land down under. We're going to Australia. So we're going to start in 1995 when a group of girl friends are on a night out in Newcastle, New South Wales. And that's when Jo Chinke meets Anu Singh. And maybe I'm saying Chinke wrong. I'm just thinking it's the same pronunciation as Chinke Tere. But maybe that's wrong. I'm just going to say that. If I'm wrong, correct me in our DMs or email. Jo was immediately taken by the beautiful 22-year-old Anu. And if you guys haven't realized it, Anu is an Indian name. So we're in Australia, but talking about an Indian girl. So, an interesting one from
Got
that it. Perspective. So, Jo Chinke was from Newcastle, New South Wales, born to Italian immigrant parents, Maria and Nino, who had worked extremely hard to build a life for themselves and their family in Australia. Growing up, Jo was described as great at sports and also a great student. He was an extremely joyful, extroverted guy who people were drawn to because of his personality. He graduated college with a degree in civil engineering and eventually found a great job in his hometown, Newcastle itself. His family described him as a guy who was always doing something because he always had a ton of energy. He was kind, always willing to help his friends, and had a ton of friends at that. So back to this fateful night of 1995 when Jo meets Anu and is mesmerized by her. By 1996, their relationship had actually become pretty serious, and everyone thought they were happy. Now, I don't mention this in my notes because I didn't really think it was important, but I actually think that in reading some of my sources, I think when Anu met Jo, she was actually dating someone else already. And I think eventually when she realizes that things with Jo are getting hot and heavy, she called it off with whoever she was dating. But again, I'm just mentioning that I don't think it's as important to the story. It does play like a very tiny part in the story, but not a big part. So
right.
Robert Tyrone, who was a friend of Joe's and also Nino and Maria's godson, said that the impression he got from Jo was that initially with Anu, Joe was extremely smitten. It was an extremely sexual attraction in the beginning. Not just that, but Anu being an aspiring lawyer at the time at Australian National University in Canberra also meant she was intellectually stimulating. So her being both beautiful and smart really, really drew Joe to Anu. I think it like magnetized him towards her or something is how his friends and family describe it. Robert also described Anu as someone who was extremely confident and that only attracted Joe to Anu even more. And it just sort of went kind of snowballed from there. So now I'm going to say this because I know what was happening, because clearly no one ever knows what happens in a relationship but the two people who are involved in the relationship. But in reading my sources, most people described the relationship as being heavily skewed to one side. And what I mean by that is they said Joe was super smitten and taken by Anu, but they never really ever got a good read on Anu. It almost looked like she was like indifferent to him.
Right.
Almost like friends with benefits, because everyone describes the relationship as very sexual and like lusty in the beginning. So I'm not sure if Anu ever meant for it to go forward. Either way, that's just the impression I got. This could be because most of my sources that I was reading or watching were from Joe's family's and friends' perspectives. There was really not much from Anu's side. So it was just an interesting point.
Yeah, that makes sense. Also, do you ever wonder if you were to die what people would say about you and your relationships?
Yes and no. Part of me doesn't want to know because I hope it's good things. But part of me also doesn't care. Honestly, over time from moving so much, I really don't care what someone else thinks about my relationship as long as I'm content with it. Like,
Yeah,
people are allowed to have their opinions. You could give me your opinion about my relationship now. That being said, I don't think I don't value people's opinions when they're close to me. I'm not saying like I won't value if my mom has something to say something about it, or my sister, or like you, but some random person who's watched like 5 stories of mine on Instagram or like heard rumors about me from someone else, if you were to come up to me and give me opinions and advice on my relationship, I probably... It'll go in one ear and go out the other.
Yeah. Well, I like wonder in like situations like, for instance, like Amanda Knox, who was accused of killing somebody she didn't kill.
Yeah.
And was put into prison. And like if we were ever in one of those situations and they would bring up our search history and our true crime podcast, like we would look probably really bad.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Maybe.
Yeah, it's always come across my mind, like, I hope I'm never in that situation.
Yeah, I hope no one ever goes through my text messages or my searches, especially my Google history. I don't even care about my text messages. Yeah. I care more about my search history when I die. Because it'll look suspicious, but it really isn't. Which is why I also said, I think in one of our episodes, I'm so glad that we're doing the podcast. Because without the podcast, I still had the same search history. There was just nothing in proof to show that there was a reason for me to have it.
Right. I was listening to a true crime episode of Murder with My Husband, and they were kind of talking about this. And one of the trials on their recent episode, they're bringing up like it was a Hollywood one, and they're bringing up like the movies he directed.
Oh, I know which one you're talking about. It's the most recent one.
Yes, and they had all this evidence against him, but they're more focused on like the fact that he was so close to all these other movies that were horror movies that were really close, like similar to the murder.
Yeah.
Which was just interesting to me that they cared more about that what it looked like versus all the evidence against him in trial.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's curious to me, like if we were ever in that situation. Yeah. Well, we have true crime podcasts and all I look up is murder.
Yeah. This was that libel case, right? And Ayanna Kassian. Or on
yes.
Uh-huh. I just listened to that one too. That was a very gory one. If you guys haven't listened to it and don't like gore, don't listen to it. Nothing against that podcast. It's just that case is just a really bizarre one.
It's intense, yeah. For sure. I've heard the case before. Actually.
I had heard of it before. I just had not known the details to that extent. Anyways, so Robert Tyrone, who is Joe's friend and Joe's parents' godson, describes actually his first meeting with Anu. He met her at a dinner, and he says he thought she was, I quote, a strange girl, unquote. According to him, most of the conversations with her revolved around the afterlife. Do you believe in the afterlife? What do you think about the afterlife? And from being Hindu myself, I know afterlife is a huge focal point in the religion. So maybe she mentioned this because she believed in it. It's still like a really weird thing to talk to someone about, specifically who someone you're meeting for the very first time. And it's not just like a random person. It's your boyfriend's like close friend. So it's just a super intense topic to bring to talk to someone about, like on your very first meeting. I just thought it was odd. I don't know if everyone else thinks it's odd.
See, again, I would probably have that conversation with every person I met.
I guess.
I am not a small talk person. I'd be like, oh, do you believe in God? Oh, do you believe in heaven?
I mean, I would eventually get to it.
What's your energy on that?
Yeah, but I feel like I've seen you talk. Like when you first met me, you didn't get that intense. You had the small talk with me. You got to know me for a little bit. And then you eventually got like probably more intense a lot quicker than I would have. But like Robert is basically describing Anu as this is all she talked about. There was never any pleasantry. Yeah, it was right. Like
it was like a fascination.
It was constant. Literally their entire dinner conversation was focused around this and
afterlife. Yeah. That's a little interesting.
Yeah, it's
sure.
Weird. She also gets weirder. She also talked to Robert about how her previous relationship prior to Joe and how intense that previous relationship was. Robert said, I quote, "She said they were so close it was almost incestuous," unquote. Is that something you would talk about, Haley?
No, I don't think so.
I just think that's a very interesting word to describe your relationship with someone. Incestuous. Like, I don't know why that comes to mind. You can use ravenous, like sexual. You can use super intimate. There's so many other adjectives to use to describe a really intense relationship other than incestuous. I feel like incestuous has a bad connotation to it. Anyways,
right.
So this girl who she's meeting her boyfriend's friend for the very first time already is like talking weird, but about afterlife and whatnot. But then she starts focusing on her like relationship with her ex in front of her current boyfriend and his friend. It just all is weird. And I don't know in what bizarro world did Anu think that that was okay. But we're going to get into a lot in this case where I don't know if Anu was all there or not. I'll leave that up to you guys to decide. But after reading that, not only did all of my red flags go up, but I was sitting there wondering, like, I don't know what Joe sees in her. Someone can be intellectual, but if someone's that socially inept, I feel like that would put me off almost entirely. But I don't know.
Right.
But either way, Robert did, however, agree in the sense that he didn't know how to react when Anu said these things at dinner, and neither did Joe. Like, Joe thought it was odd that Anu was mentioning these things about afterlife and especially her ex-boyfriend, but he never mentioned anything at dinner, and he sort of just let her ramble on. But I don't know. My thought on all of this is that maybe she was looking to get a reaction out of Joe. You know how some girls like that their men get a little bit possessive about them? And, you know, I'm not saying like super possessive where you're my property kind of shit. It's more like you sometimes secretly want them to get jealous or want them to get jealous. Yeah, uh-huh. You want that reaction out of this.
For
yeah.
Sure.
So maybe she was looking for that. I don't know. But who knows? It's just odd.
We never know. Probably.
Yeah.
It is interesting.
It seems that. This was very characteristic of their relationship, though. Joe took kind of a back seat and it was always in Anu's shadows. And Anu was always front and center, leading all the conversations, weird ones at that. And Joe's friends thought it was a huge shift from Joe's personality. Joe used to be the extroverted, loud person who commanded the room versus now with Anu, he was just sort of in the back in her shadows, and that was odd to them. And they noticed this change almost immediately in him every time they saw her with Anu.
I feel like we see that a lot when it comes to like abusive, toxic relationships.
Yeah.
Where somebody's light is very dimmed.
Yeah.
And it's obvious to the friends, you know, and family.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not obvious, but a lot of times it is.
Yeah, I agree. It is a pretty common theme where someone takes a backseat and they never used to, and their personality changes. But So it also seemed that Anu wasn't very liked by Joe's parents. They described her as someone who completely overpowered all conversations. I'm seeing a pattern emerge here. According to Nino and Maria, it was hard for them to talk to their own son because they felt like Anu was competing with them for Joe's attention, which to me is really bizarre. Good luck to the girl who wants to compete with me for Leo's attention. Maria gives an example of their family dinners. And every night at 6 p.m., Joe, Nino, and Maria would sit and eat dinner together. But apparently, if Anu called 10 minutes, 5 minutes into dinner, Joe would stop everything, stop eating, and go talk to her for hours. It literally got to the point where eventually Maria had to call and tell Anu that please try and call after dinner is over so that I can see my son eat. Like, don't bother him when we're eating. Just wait, like, 30 minutes. So it seemed like Joe and Anu's relationship was like fitting a square peg in a round hole. According to Joe's friends, Joe changed quickly after meeting her because it was Anu's way or the highway. So remember, Joe is from Newcastle and Anu was studying law in Canberra, and the long distance, like usual, was causing a strain in their relationship. And after months and months of conversations, Joe finally decides to move to Canberra to be with Anu. Joe's parents were extremely against this decision and they very much did not want him to move. I think his mom at some point said that she even begged him to stay. And Joe said something like, no, Anu needs me, or something like that. According to the episode about this story on crimes that shook Australia, after just a few months of moving in together, Joe was beginning to question his long-term compatibility with Anu. Shocker. And was starting to make plans for the future that maybe Anu wasn't part of. In the same episode, someone said that Anu was the type of person who constantly craved attention from Joe, and that in order to get that attention, she would create drama to get it. And while Joe fed her the attention initially, he eventually got tired of the roller coaster and was sort of retreating. Robert,
he like saw through her games.
Yeah, I mean, it does get exhausting if you need so much affirmation constantly. You know, I truly think it's true.
Well, and then creating drama to get it.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, it speaks to volumes of insecurities that she might have had, right? And I think it's so true that before you get in a relationship and you expect someone else to love you, you truly should learn to love yourself. So when you're looking for that approval and acceptance on the outside, I feel like it just gets exhausting for your partner.
For sure. Yeah.
So.
And that about emotional exhaustion in that for both parties to create drama and then have to confirm these make you feel better about these insecurities. I don't know what the right words are.
Yeah, no, I get it.
Yeah.
Well, Robert said the last time he saw Joe, Joe had just bought a new car and he had seen a new spark in his friend's eye that made that, and that he thought maybe the car meant more to Joe and that it was a signaling for a hope for his future away from Anu, and that maybe he was trying to get back the old Joe himself. Less than 3 months after that meeting with Robert, Joe would end up dead in what I can only describe as an extremely horrible death. Dun, 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 dun. Sorry, this is my nervous laughter, guys. Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh. It's sad. I just nervous laughed. Okay, so in 1997, so now this is Joe and Anu have known each other for 2 years. Joe and Anu were living together on Antol Street in Canberra. Anu started to have odd behaviors and was showing signs of weird paranoia around her health. She apparently had dealt with multiple mental health problems for years, even before she had met Joe, and despite being smart, she struggled with keeping those demons away. She was obsessed with her physical appearance and craved attention. The attention-seeking behavior existed also at a very early age. Even in high school, and a psychologist that was covering this case had also said that she would go to extreme lengths to get that attention, even in high school.
Do we know what she was diagnosed with? Like, was she diagnosed a narcissist?
We're going to get into that in a little bit. there will be a lot. These issues became even more of an issue once Anu had to move away from her family to Canberra for her law degree at Australian National University. I think she struggled being away from home, and her old demons were sort of like, the stress was a trigger where everything sort of came back. She had bulimia. And for those of you who don't know what that is, it's an eating disorder. I'm by no means an expert, but I believe from my understanding, this is where people who have, this is for people who have some, not for, this is where people have some sort of body dysmorphia. And so whenever they eat, they force themselves to throw up because they think that food is leading them to be fat or something awful that they perceive about their body. And essentially, the only thing I know for sure is that most bulimic people throw up after almost every meal in order to not consume those calories.
And it's super bad for you. You lose your hair, your teeth.
Yeah.
And
you're malnourished, you can have essentially. Heart issues. And it can't, it is, yeah. it has physical symptoms, but really it is a mental disorder. And it can be very stressful for the person themselves, but also the family watching this person deteriorate in front of them. On top of that, Anu had started believing she had terrible diseases and that her body was rotting from the inside. So Joe had apparently at some point, because of knowing these things, according to Anu, this is what she claims, that Joe, knowing these issues that Anu was struggling with, had suggested that she take Ipecac. It's a drug that induces vomiting. And even though I couldn't find a confirmation for sure that Joe had suggested this, it's possible that with everything else, Anu just sort of made that up, that detail as well. But nonetheless, she was taking Ipecac, and in her mind, Joe was the one who told her about it. Anu's paranoia went as far as convincing herself that she even had AIDS. She started blaming Joe for these diseases because she claimed they were stemming from Ipecac. For those of you who don't really know what Ipecac is, I actually have knowledge of Ipecac, not because I'm a murderer or because I'm sadistic. My aunt, who is an homeopathic doctor, used to prescribe this to us when we were kids, when we had a stomach bug. So when we traveled and we weren't really feeling good, she used to prescribe us Ipecac in very small doses for us to throw up, like whatever it is that was causing the stomach bug in the first place. So oftentimes when I'm traveling, I actually have this little Ziploc of homeopathic medicines with me, and they have some common ones, and Ipecac is one of them that I carry for like a stomach flu or something.
Interesting. Yeah. I had never heard of it until just
now. Yeah. So Joe's friend Robert said that Joe suggesting Ipecac was not only weird, it was unbelievable, because the Joe that he knew didn't take any drugs, not even recreationally, and he is positive that Joe didn't even know what Ipecac was. So the point that Robert was trying to make was that he doesn't think Joe told Anu about Ipecac, and he just didn't know what it was. So I'm pretty sure Anu made it up. Well, I'm not pretty sure. It's my opinion that Anu made it up. Anu made that little detail up in her paranoia and all the other stuff that was going on with her.
Right.
So Anu at this point had become suicidal. And I think at some point Anu started planning some suicide pact where she was not only going to take her own life, but also Joe's, for whatever role he had played in getting her to this desperate point.
So some murder suicide shit.
Yeah. So now, mind you, all the sources keep referencing this as a pact of some sort, which to me first read as, oh, maybe Joe knows this and Joe's agreed. Nope. It turns out he did not know that Anu was planning any such sort of thing. Like, he was completely unaware. And this is where the case gets completely fucked up. On Sunday, October 26, 1997, Nino and Maria were waiting for Joe to call for their weekly family tea chat in the afternoon. This was a routine that Joe never, ever missed. He would call his parents every Sunday afternoon to have tea together with them and just catch up on life. So when Joe didn't call Maria decided to call him. And around 5 p.m. when she dialed his number, a random person on the phone picked up. And initially she thought she had the wrong number. But at the same time, well, she calls back, and at the same time someone knocks on their door. So she realizes very quickly that the person on the phone picking up Joe's phone is a police officer. And when she opened her door, she immediately knew that something was wrong. Her stomach sank and she pretty much yelled, "She killed him. She killed him." Maria's worst fear was true. She flew to Canberra and identified Joe's body. Her beloved son was now dead. The police quickly came to the conclusion that there was foul play involved and that Anu was somehow to blame. On October 20th, so we're going back in time now because I'm going to try to give you guys background on what happened before the death as best as I can. On October 20th, this is 6 days before Joe's died, Anu arranged for a dinner party at her and Joe's home. Apparently, her dinner guests that included her friends knew that this was supposed to be some sort of a farewell party that Anu was throwing for herself, and that after this dinner party, Anu was going to kill herself and also take Joe's life in this demented murder-suicide pact. Just take a moment. I don't know if you guys have picked up on what I just said. She's inviting people over for a dinner party that she has told these people is a farewell to both her and Joe. So they all know that she's going to kill herself and Joe afterwards. Just saying that for now.
That's bizarre.
Yeah.
That's bizarre.
I literally.
So they all know and they're still going to go to this dinner. Mm-hmm.
I literally have what the fuck in my notes. So again, I have so many questions, but apparently.
I don't think they're like going on a trip.
No. No, no, it's I.
She's literally
when
told
I first
them
researched this case, I thought that was a mistake. No, they all knew. Every single person who attended that dinner party knew what was going to happen,
except Joe. Mm-hmm.
So again, I have so many questions, but apparently everyone but Joe knew.
I never that understand this was the plan. How people get told these things and then don't do anything about it.
I don't even know.
Why does this
really,
happen so
it's
much?
It's really fucked up. I know. If someone was coming to my place for dinner and knew that my husband was going to kill me and himself after this dinner, I would hope that they like shoot me a text at the very least to be like, "Hey, do you know Drew's been talking crazy things? Like, he might do this." If not even that, if you're like worried about doing that, just do a wellness check. Just call the fucking police. Like, what kind of friends did Anu and Joe have to know this sort of information and to not do anything about it and to not even think to ask Joe if he knew what his girlfriend was saying? Even if they thought it was a joke, it's concerning in itself.
Right. Yeah.
That being said, it is 1997.
I don't know how I'd handle it if somebody said that to me and be like, "Hey, Connor has been planning on killing you guys
after
and he's inviting
dinner,
himself for
it's
dinner."
It's just bizarre. Yeah. I mean,
I would be like, "You're funny."
Yeah, that being said, it is 1997. Anu is Indian, and being Indian myself, I know we're sort of behind on like mental health progress. I think it's very much like not as popular to get help for your mental health in Indian culture. I think it's very much improving and there's progress, and I hope that it continues to go that way. But I can completely
That's
believe
good.
That in 1997, maybe Anu didn't feel like that. But again, and I'm not going to put all the blame on like the non-Indians here, but just as a friend, Indian or not, I feel like if my friend was talking crazy or if my friend's girlfriend was talking crazy like that, I feel like I would at least tell my friend, you know?
That's just so bizarre to me.
Yeah.
It caught me off guard for sure.
So I don't know if her friends just didn't believe her, like I said, but there is proof that in June 1997, Anu and her friend Madhavi Rao were seen at the National Library where they had been photocopying pages of a book about suicide by the Hemlock Society. So now I'm basically walking you through what led up to the dinner party. In July or August of 1997, she approached a law student and asked if she could obtain a gun. If he could obtain a gun for Anu. When he asked her why she wanted that, she said she wanted to kill herself because she had permanent neurological damage. Now, remember, she thought that she had all these diseases that were going to kill her, that her body was rotting from inside. So she's basically telling this fellow law student, I need you to get a gun for me, and I need you to get it because I want to kill myself because I have permanent neurological damage and I don't want to die this painful death, so I just want to take my own life. I don't know why this student didn't at that point report this. This is all just bizarre to me, but I'm just at least going to describe the series of events. In the same month, she approached another fellow law student and asked him to help her get another gun so she could kill herself. She told him that she had considered a number of methods, including poisoning and hanging, but she decided that shooting herself was the best option. To another person that she approached about a gun, she said that she had had a reaction to the drug Ipecac and that it had caused an illness which would cause her to slowly degenerate. She said that it would eat away at her muscle and fat until she was incapacitated and that she needed the gun to kill herself instead of slowly dying of this disease. I mean, it's all
so her friend is just like going along to the library and looking all this stuff.
Yeah. So she asked all these different fellow students for a gun. She doesn't get it anywhere. And eventually she asks one of her friend, Madhavi Rao, who was at the dinner also. And she goes with this friend to the library to start researching like suicide things. During the same month, Anu's dad had cleaned her car for her and noted that her clothes were in the boot, which we call a trunk, with tags indicating that they were for sale. When he asked her why she was doing that, she explained that she didn't need the clothes anymore, that she had also began giving her CDs away to her brothers. And when her brothers asked her why she was doing that, she didn't need to. She didn't really listen to them. I'm just trying to describe like all this bizarre behavior. She's selling her clothes. She's researching suicide. She's giving
what,
her.
What do you even sell your clothes for? I mean,
I think she's trying to hint at the fact that like she's not going to be around.
Create the drama, yeah, and get people to feel sympathy. Mm-hmm.
Or she's at least giving the signal that she's going to kill herself, right? Like she's essentially giving away her worldly possessions. Anyways, desperate and worried, Anu's parents actually called the mental health crisis line team in Canberra. So there were many signs of the fact that Anu was deeply troubled and that not only did she need immediate medical help, but it shows that her friends had no excuse to just ignore Anu's threats of the suicide pact as a pretty deranged joke. Like, I don't know. I would never say that's a joke.
It's
just weird. Yeah. Especially if I go as far as like hosting a dinner party for it. At that point, it's really not a joke to me. So back to our story.
Weird.
Yeah. Back to our story. Apparently after the dinner on October 20th, 1997, Anu gave Joe a coffee that was spiked with Rohypnol. And if you guys don't know what Rohypnol is, it's the date rape drug, which essentially knocked him out. And then according to the evidence, that same night on October 20th, 1997, she tried to inject Joe's body with heroin. But the heroin was so concentrated that it had congealed and sort of formed a solid mass, so she couldn't inject it. Because it was now solid, the attempt failed. So Joe apparently woke up the next morning with what he thought was a severe hangover, because remember, she had drugged him with the date rape drug, and was unaware that he had just narrowly escaped death. Now, still, none of the friends that Anu had invited to dinner the night before did anything to stop this. They're all presumably studying law, so it's not like they don't know what the law is and what's right and wrong. Not that you need to be a lawyer to know that, but they were all pretty smart and coherent to know that they should have done something, like anything. Clearly, she just made an attempt to take Joe's life by overdosing him on heroin. She failed, but she did make that attempt, and someone should have stopped her. I also read in some sources that it was Madhavi Rao, her friend who was helping her research suicide, who helped her get the Rohypnol in the first place.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So not only like this joke and like what I mean, if you were to take it as a joke, but I mean, it's not really a joke, obviously. But she went and got her the drugs.
Yeah, it's just bizarre.
And how do people even find rape drugs? And who sells that shit, really, you guys?
I don't know. It's a good thing I don't know, and it's a good thing that you don't know. But maybe I'll ask that ski mask guy next time if he knows. Well, turns out that failed attempt did not stop Anu, and instead she prepared for round two. She prepared for a second dinner party where she again drugged Joe with the date rape drug and then injected with him with two massively concentrated doses of heroin. So now I skimmed over this part, but what I'm really saying here is on October 20th, 1997, she attempted to kill him. She failed. So she invited all those people over again for another dinner party under the same thing where they all knew she was going to kill Joe and then kill herself. And they all came again, and no one told Joe. And the second time, she pulls this off again. She gives him the drug and then injects him with two massively concentrated doses of heroin.
Did she tell all these people, hey, I failed the first time?
Yeah, well, supposedly some knew, and there's apparently text message proofs of that they knew.
Oh, Text messages in 1977?
1997.
Okay, yeah.
So, again...
Really?
Yeah.
Was there text messages in 1997?
Yeah, there weren't iPhones, but there were mobiles.
I don't know.
So, yeah, I mean, 1997, there were text messages. There were cell phones. There weren't iPhones, but I remember those, like, old-timey Nokia cell phones that you used to play right. Snakes on.
Where you had to use, like, T9, and you had to, like, text, like, every A, B, C.
Again, no one tried to stop her. She had done this to Joe on Friday, October 24th, 1997, and Joe was still alive on Saturday, just tossing and turning in his bed in agony and pain. And he was alive on Sunday. So it turns out that the failed attempt didn't really stop Anu. Obviously, she was trying to host the second dinner party where she again drugs him and then immediately after tries to inject him with two massively concentrated doses of heroin. She had done this to Joe on Friday, October 24th, 1997, which was the night of the second dinner party. Joe was still alive in the early morning hours of Saturday, just sort of like tossing and turning in his bed in agony and pain. Aww. Because clearly someone had just shot him up with two concentrated, not someone, his love of his life had just shot him up with two concentrated doses of heroin. He was also alive on Sunday, sources say, and when Anu finally sees him struggling and close to death, she doesn't call the emergency services. She calls her friend. Yeah, she calls her friend. I don't know which friend because I couldn't read that in the sources. And she apparently tells this friend.
Whatever her name is.
Madhavi. Yeah, I don't know if it was her, but possibly. And apparently tells this friend that there has been an overdose. And the friend says that she needs to call the police. And Anu says, no, I can't call the police. And essentially the friend calls her a selfish bitch, which is why I don't think it was Madhavi. And then says that if you call and he lives, you will have an angry boyfriend on your hands. But if you don't call and he dies, you will get a murder charge, you fucking idiot. So apparently that's when she decides to call 000, which is Australia's version of 911. She calls 911 and says, I quote, in a very calm voice, yeah, could I get an ambulance, please? And this is imagine me with an Australian accent. I have a person potentially overdosed on heroin, end quote. The operator questions her on the word potential, to which she says, I quote, well, he's not, he's vomiting everywhere, blood stuff, unquote. And then when they try to send help, she lies about multiple details like her name. She calls herself Olivia. She lies about her address. At first, she says it's not an apartment building. Then she says it is an apartment building. Then she gives them the wrong address. Then she eventually gives them the right address. It's a lot of what looks to me like when you listen to the 000 call that she's trying to like impede any efforts to get help for Joe in time. It just makes me bonkers thinking back to like being in that moment where Joe was probably alive, holding on to his life.
Hearing it all.
Yeah, like his girlfriend who he loved so much, like not only had done this horrible stuff to him, but was now not letting him get help. It breaks my heart. She was screaming 1 second and then...
Damn, but he was high as fuck. I mean, poor guy.
Yeah. She was screaming 1 second on the 000 call and then expressing her love for Joe the next. I mean, I listened to the 911 call and you can listen to the 911 call in one of the sources that I will list as well. She literally goes back and forth like, well, wait, I'll give you my address, but can you just tell me if this is bad? Like, if he's splitting blood, is it bad? Is he going to live? Is he not going to live? Like, she is so... I don't even know what the right word to describe it. She just seems intentionally erratic. Like, I don't know. I don't know. I'm just frustrated.
Well, 911 calls are very telling. Yeah. And I mean, she probably could have got away with it if she kind of like let him die and then called 911 and was like, hey, this, my
well, I think
overdosed.
That's what gave her up, right? He was in this condition since Friday. That's why the police immediately knew that he was clearly suffering for two whole days and she did nothing. By the time help came, Joe was dead, unfortunately. The police described Anu as very frazzled and that she was pacing back and forth. When she was questioned about how a fit, healthy young man like Joe could have died of a drug overdose when he had no background of drug use, the plot for the suicide pact began to unfold. And when pressed further as to why she didn't proceed to kill herself, because she kept saying this was like murder-suicide, so clearly after killing Joe or attempting to kill Joe, she should have attempted to kill herself, she still to this date has never answered that question. The cop questioning her described her as showing no signs of sorrow. She was crying, but there were never any tears. And eventually on that very same...
Crocodile tears.
She was like pretending to cry. Leo does this now, which makes me sad. He's not as evil as this girl, but...
He just wants attention.
He like also puts his finger out now or like whatever he's hurt and wants me to kiss it when he gets hurt. He's like, oh, mom, cute. Anyways, so there were
not what she's doing.
So there were never any tears on Anu's part, and eventually on that same day, Anu was charged with Joe's murder. They also charged Anu's friend Madhavi as well. In October of 1998, a year after Joe's murder, they were both supposed to be tried together, but due to a technicality, after 4 weeks, that attempt didn't succeed. So they both got an individual trial each and exercised their right to trial by a judge. So no juries, which we've heard of before, apparently it also exists in Australia. And in Australia, apparently the accused can choose to do that just like in America. Anu also chose not to give a statement in her defense. And the focus here is on the word premeditated. I know this came up in the last episode that we covered with Haley. So premeditated is always really important, and fellow true crime lovers would know that. Did Anu plan to kill Joe, and what was her motive? Prosecution could clearly show premeditation. However, there wasn't a very strong motive. The only motive they had here was the idea that Anu blamed Joe for what Ipecac in her mind had done to her health, and she thus wanted revenge. But that pointed directly to the fact that she was indeed unwell mentally, and that this concoction that Joe was responsible for her choosing to take a drug and then somehow being paranoid about a terminally ill disease or whatever was an indication that she maybe wasn't all there. So there are holes in prosecution's case as well.
Yeah, because now, well, they can plead on insanity probably. But I feel like a lot of times with insanity cases, they'll fight that if you premeditate it, that you weren't really insane when you were doing it.
Yeah, you're getting ahead of me, so I'm going to speak to that. You're pretty close to what they did. However, this is interesting because she clearly read books about suicide, somehow got the drugs, planned not one but two dinner parties of which the purpose was to kill Joe and then her, potentially. So she knew that her actions were going to result in Joe's death. So you can show premeditation. You can show that she's aware of what she's doing. She obviously even knew that it was wrong because she's clearly planning this farewell party for their friends, which led them to the plea, by them I mean the defense, of diminished responsibility. This is basically close to an insanity plea, but diminished responsibility basically says that yes, she did all that, but was also a result of a deadly combination of mental disorders, which the defense will call a psychologist on stand to give their expert testimony. And they said that her mental disorders included abnormality of mind, borderline personality disorder, depression, eating disorder, etc., etc. The list goes on. And all those led to a diminished mental capacity where she, while responsible for her actions and was completely capable of comprehending what was happening, but her decision-making skills were severely impaired. The judge accepted this, unfortunately, and gave her 10 years with only the first 4 years without parole. Given the time that she had already spent in jail, by that time, get this, she only spent an additional 18 months in jail and then was out. I don't even know how devastating this was for
Wait, so she's
his mom.
Out?
Yeah, she was out in under 4 years.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know, like, as a mom,
that's fucked up.
I can't even imagine what Maria is going through to this day. Like, how absolutely fucking devastating for Joe's family. Maria, by the way, to this day, who is Joe's mom, refuses to accept Anu's apologies, and she refers to her as the devil. The question still, yeah, I would too. That's like very mildly putting it. The question still stands as to how these people and friends, quote, who were invited to this dinner party,
yeah,
allowed for this to happen. Like, why did no one do anything?
And why didn't they get charged?
Yeah. So none of them get charged. Despite Anu being so forthright about her intentions, why did no one get her help? Sadly, no one ever has answered that question, and no one has ever gotten a satisfactory answer. Someone said that it's because they all had distanced themselves from this crime, that they didn't allow much of an understanding to themselves of the gravity of the situation of what will happen. Maybe they thought it was a joke. I don't know.
Well, at least a friend who gave her the drugs.
Yeah, so we'll get into her in a little bit. Because remember from earlier, she actually was also charged with the murder. So her trial is still pending. Like in this case, okay. I haven't gone through it yet. So do I think Anu knew what she was doing? Yes. And mm-hmm. I'm going to keep going back to Michelle Carter's case where I argued for empathy for someone who was suffering through mental health. I don't have that for Anu here. Because unlike Michelle...
I don't have it for her either.
Yeah, well, I know. Unlike Michelle, Anu actually did pull the trigger here. Remember, I always kept saying, like, Michelle never pulled the trigger. Michelle never helped with the planning. Anu did all the planning. Joe never saw this coming. She took away Joe's life and in turn took away Maria and Nino's son. And I don't think that she was able to comprehend. I don't think...
At the very least, like, because she premeditated it for so long.
Yeah, for months.
She should be in a mental facility for
yeah,
a
she's
long
not.
Time.
She's out. At least 25 she's dating years. Someone else. She's living her life. Yeah. She made a choice not only to purposefully end Joe's life, but also plant the execution for months. And I hold the friends who allowed for this to happen just as accountable. They might not have done anything, but by not calling for help, they were just as much an accessory in my mind. Not that any of these people care what I think about that, about them, but it is my opinion. So yeah, respectfully, I don't think justice was served here. By the way, Madhavi Rao, she was never found guilty of anything. Also sad, I know. But... Yeah.
Damn, Australia, do better.
Yeah, Anu planned the murder not once but twice and succeeded the second time, and she got under 4 years. Like, it's crazy. I'm absolutely appalled and disgusted that this woman now roams free while Joe's parents are left to basically mourn the loss of their son. And that's it.
It's incredibly fucked up.
Yeah.
In Australia, you failed.
Yeah, I don't know much about your... laws there, but maybe this one needs to a little bit looking into.
Yeah, not saying we don't fail, we fail all the time, but
yeah,
damn, this was a fail. Boo.
Mm-hmm. I feel extremely sad for Joe's parents, but yeah, that's it. That's all she wrote, guys. That was my case for today. If you've heard about it before, if you've heard about it before and know more about this case, about maybe the friends side, you know, hit us up in the DMs. I honestly was not able to find anything. I searched up and down the interwebs for that, but I wasn't able to get anything. So if you know anything more about this case, definitely hit us up. All right. We will see you next week with a drink in hand. Don't let the murder thoughts bite. Bye.